Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Glad to have you here. We got Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, with us right now. As you know, he joins us once a month to talk to us about what's going on out there in the economy for something under, well, actually, maybe over 30 years. For a long time, folks, since he was eight, he's been polling small business owners every month, every single month, to find out what they think about what's going on in the economy. What's it look like around the world, in the world of small businesses? And he polls them, and he pulls that information together and creates a report. He's been doing that now all these years. And for a number of years, about seven or so, maybe almost eight, he's been sharing that information with us. He's also a professor at Temple University in the great city of Philadelphia. More importantly, he's our good friend. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Jim, always a pleasure, and good morning. How you doing?
It's good to have you back. How are things at the NFIB?
Well, things are looking pretty good, I guess. As you know, we have a new president, CEO, and so
yep.
He's still busy working on finding his way around the organization. When you have 600,000 member firms spread across 50 states and an organization to support that, why, you know, it takes a while.
Well, that's Mr. Todd Stottlemyre, by the way, and I think Todd's going to be on the show next week. He's been on a couple of times already. Bill, when I, for the last, you know, 8 or 9 years since I've been walking around the country, traveling around the country, talking to small business owners, as I poll them, as I always do, what are you the most concerned about? What's the thing that's the most on your mind right now? What wakes you up at night? It's gone from inflation to not having enough capital to needing more business to health care was the biggie for a long time. Now it's neither one of those, is it?
No, it doesn't seem to be. Actually, there's no particular problem that's really stepping up to the plate
except
the number one.
Except what I find, Bill, is that the biggest concern is it's amazing how many small business owners tell me this, sometimes without being provoked, sometimes without being asked. They say, when I say to them, what can I do to help you? They say, help me find qualified people. I've got jobs going wanting right now.
Yeah, that seems to be a persistent problem for us. And actually, you know, just in the last year or two, it's been growing. We've seen the percentage of our owners who say that finding qualified employees is their top business challenge, not the taxes, not energy costs, not all the stuff that's been flashy in the press. We see the percent saying that is finding qualified workers. Now it's the highest we've seen since that bizarre period called the dot-com boom, when everybody thought we were short on everything. So if you take those kind of unusual years out, the 98, 99, early 2000 years out, this is it. We're at a record high level now in terms of the percent of owners who find, you know, they can't get people to fill the positions that they have open.
Well, you know, in the late 90s, we were overemployed. We had people working who shouldn't have been working. We had companies in business who they weren't in business. They were open. That shouldn't have been open. That we had people doing things. Yeah, exactly. We had people doing things that should never have been done. I mean, that was an aberration, as Charles McKay called it. It was a madness of crowds. It was popular delusion, extraordinary popular delusions, and the madness of crowds. That was the title of his 1848 book, and that's what we had in the late 90s. Now what we have is a truly robust and vigorous and stable economy, don't we, Bill?
Right. Compared to then, you know, the nice thing about this economy is there's nothing really out of whack other than the fact that, you know, we are borrowing huge amounts of money through our trade deficit. you know, having an ace.
But isn't that, but Bill, isn't that good? Isn't that kind of good for small businesses? I mean, it's making, look at the capital that's available. Isn't that converting to more capital available for small businesses?
Sure, well, the flip side of a huge trade deficit is the fact that there's a huge capital inflow into the United States. As the world is saving a lot of money, they think the best place to put the money is in the United States. So that money comes over here, and then when we try to spend it to build new plants or hire more people or whatever, we're short on stuff. We can't make enough stuff here, and that's why a huge trade deficit opens up.
Right.
Thank goodness it does, because if we didn't get the trade deficit, we'd have obviously very serious inflation.
Tell me a better place to invest the world's money than in an American small business. Tell me where's a better place. I don't know a one.
There isn't any.
I don't think the stock market's a better place, I can tell you that. Stand by. It's 2010. We'll be right back with our good friend, Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business. 2010, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend, Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the NFIB, and we're talking about what he's finding that small business owners are telling him about the economy. One of the things they're telling him is that they need more people. Capital is not a problem, though, is it, Bill?
It seems that we have a surfeit of capital. It's everywhere. You can see a lot of it being played out in lots of companies deciding that they like the small business model better. They may not be getting smaller, but they're going private,
right.
So they can manage their companies better and stop worrying about those quarterly estimates and all the nonsense that goes with that. So a lot of that is going on. The little bank I work with, we're busy getting our number of shareholders down under that magic number so that we can kind of be private as well. And,
another thing,
gets a big load of government bureaucracy that we think is pretty much useless off of your back.
Another thing, Bill, that I'm seeing is I talk to small business owners. I mean, I met a guy yesterday, has 11 employees, and he's doing business. He's an international company. He's doing business overseas. I mean, I don't mean that he's selling overseas. He's actually outsourcing overseas. But here's an example of a story that Lou Dobbs will never tell. This guy wouldn't be in business if he were not able to do some of his business overseas. He gets a certain part of his business manufactured offshore, and he brings it back here and sells it here. If it weren't for that, he wouldn't have an 11-person company.
Yeah, well, what Lou Dobbs fails to note is that, even though he complains that we've lost all these jobs and so on, is that except for that silly dot-com period, the 2000, we employ the highest percentage of the eligible working population today in our history. So if all the alleged jobs came back that all these critics talk about, we would have no one to take them.
We are
fully employed. The unemployment rate shows that. And it's still amazing to me when I put out our NFIB stats to show one out of every four small business owners has a job opening they can't fill, and that
right. A
near record percent plan to increase employment. People say, well, it can't be true. The economy's in the tank. But, of course, it's not. It's a very, very solid, excellent economy.
Why does the media persist in portraying the U.S. economy as not being very good? I don't get it. In the headlines, the page one above the fold headline on USA Today is that basically, I don't remember the exact words, but it's Iraq and the economy are the two determining factors in the election this year. And I read down just a little bit in it, and it said that something like polls show that people are increasingly negative about the economy. Bill, what game are they watching?
Right, I know. That's the big disconnect. I would agree that the economy should be one of the biggest issues in the election, but if you think about the work of Ray Fair over at Princeton, who basically shows how you can call the major elections with the pocketbook issues, It should be a major positive for the incumbency, either in Congress or for the president if he were running, if we had a presidential race. The economy is terrific, and it's been doing very well. Inflation is historically low, even though it's above where the Fed would like to see it. And so times have been good. But I guess there are a few headline things, like energy costs and, that people pay attention to, and they don't really look at the fundamentals. Hopefully when they walk into that booth, they'll say, dang, life is really very good. Why, why aren't I happy with what's going on?
Well, it's hard to imagine in an economy where anybody who wants a job can get a job. Anybody who wants a better job can find the education and the training to get themselves ready for that better job. So many employment opportunities where you can learn on the job to qualify for a better job. There's never been a better place on the planet or a time on the planet when you could start a small business and be successful than right now. What's wrong? I don't see what's wrong with that picture myself.
Yeah, well, maybe there's a bias in the good news is not news anymore. The only news that seems to be news is bad news. And so if you look around enough, if you go to Detroit and ask people how's life, where GM and Ford are combined
right.
to 80,000 layoffs, you can probably find some people who are not happy. But you look at the overall numbers, oh, my gosh, the economy is doing very well. But it's a boring headline, so you just don't see it. Nobody's going to report it. Regardless of their politics,
you're never going to see the 10,000 planes landed safely, are you?
Yeah, that's right. So the fact that the economy is doing so well, how many times can you put in a newspaper article, employment's at a record high percentage of the population? loses its pizzazz, I guess. That's unfortunate. So the reporters wrote.
Well, I think those actually were the headlines in the year 2000.
Yeah, definitely.
In the 2000 election, I think that actually was the headline.
The problem
so
was.
So I don't think there's any question that the media is biased, Bill. You and I have never talked a lot of politics on the show, but I don't think. If you ever wondered about it before, you got to know it now. When you see these headlines and the way they frame the headlines, the way they frame the questions, anybody who could find enough to call this economy a negative. There's no other way to say it but biased.
Right, right. Well, we know the media's biased. That's clear. You just look at what the New York Times puts on for its top stories.
Right.
It's clear that they're not just reporting, they're lobbying.
Absolutely. Stand by, Bill. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, folks, the Fed is meeting today, the Federal Open Market Committee. We're going to find out what Bill thinks they're going to do today with interest rates. 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Does anybody really know what time it is?
Hey, could you really compromise a position?
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out when you can. Use it to your advantage. It's free. It's available to you to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out our blog also. Bill Dunkelberg is our guest, Dr. William Dunkelberg, and former head of the business school and business and economics school at Temple University, and now a professor of economics there and chief economist for the NFIB. And that's NFIB.com, by the way, folks, if you want to check out their website, and I encourage you to do that. NFIB does the work that they do for small business. When you find out, it will amaze you, and it'll make you want to be part of them. Bill, by the way, your work, your survey, is available on my homepage. It's available at the NFIB.com website, but it's also available on your website, isn't it?
Right, smallbizbus.org. We put them up there every month, and so you can see them there right after we release them in the morning of the second Tuesday of every month.
It's a good report, folks. I encourage you to check it out. Bill, the Federal Open Market Committee, the decision-making arm of the Federal Reserve Board, meets about nine times a month, a year, something like that, 10 times every 6 weeks or so. And they're meeting today. And what do you think that they're going to do? Are they going to raise rates? Are they going to lower rates? Are they going to stay the same? Are they going to lean one way or the other? What do you think?
Well, of course, this this is a two-day meeting, so they won't tell us what they're
Oh, that's right.
Do.
That's right. It's
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right.
Tomorrow afternoon at 2:15. It was pretty clear to me that they're going to sit tight. In a sense, you could argue the data are moving their way. We're seeing in our survey, for example, a very slight decline month after month from April in the percent of firms raising prices. So I suppose you could call that disinflation. That's going down. We got a lucky month with in September because the headline consumer price index actually showed prices falling at 6% annual rate. It was all energy, everything else in that basket that we price out every month to see if we have inflation or not, went up in price. And the core inflation rate, which excludes the energy from your car in your house and excludes food, is still running closer to 3 than the 1 to 2 range that the Fed has pretty much said that they accept. So they can't cut rates, that's for sure. They're most likely to sit tight and see if the economy continues to slow and the inflation rate comes down. And unless they get some real bad news somewhere, I think they'll sit tight.
Well, I think you're right. And there's really, as long as, they've raised rates. And I want to say this, Bill. I've complained a lot about what they've done before. I thought that they waited too long to raise rates. I think they raised them too many times in a row. I think it made them look too predictable. But I got to say, I really have to thank them now for not continuing to raise rates, for looking around them and seeing that some of the inflation was caused by what I consider to be an aberration, and that was an unreasonably high price for oil.
Right.
And that the fundamentals of the economy, with the exception of petroleum, are actually pretty solid, aren't they, and pretty healthy.
Right. Even the housing market is looking really pretty good. It's definitely slow, but we're still going to build, 1.7 or more, 1.7 million or maybe a little higher than that new houses this year. That's about the third or fourth highest in history. So,
well, the housing market needed to ease up a little bit, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we did have, fortunately, we don't put house prices in the CPI or we would have shown an awful lot of house price inflation. And, of course, those prices have now turned around and are coming down the other way. Those markets had a median price increase of 40%, like Vegas and Cape Coral, Fort Myers, and so on. They're seeing major price declines, as is appropriate. Those were speculative areas, and they are now approaching sanity again.
Bill, if Nancy Pelosi gets in the Speaker's House and the Democrats win Congress, if they get replace their leadership in Congress, and they accomplish what they say they want to accomplish, one of which is to repeal those tax cuts that we got a couple of 3 years ago, what would that do to the economy in 20 seconds?
Well, I think it probably wouldn't be great for the economy. They'll generate a lot of uncertainty because they'll, of course, attack the administration, spend a lot of time doing that. Tax increases are never really good for the economy. And they've got a lot of regulatory stuff in mind. They want to raise the minimum wage. They want to do all kinds of things that we know will slow economic growth, and that's bad news.
Yeah. Bill, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always. We'll see you next month, and we'll see how things go.
I'll be there.
Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, he's the best. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.